Nothing more reveals the heart of God than when Jesus Christ is dying on a cross bearing the sins of the whole world, that the two things that preoccupy his mind are the salvation of one sinner and the care of one widow. There is the heart of God, a heart of compassion toward sinners and those women in need.
Welcome to another half hour of Bible teaching with John MacArthur here on Grace to You. Now, a lot has changed for women in our day, particularly in the West, but also throughout the world, more women than ever before working outside the home, staying single longer, living on their own after a divorce. So with so many women apparently self-sufficient, what does that mean for widows today? Is it easier for them to adapt to life without a husband? How does Scripture direct you and your church to respond to the needs of widows in our day? John MacArthur is answering the question in his current study called Caring for Widows, helping you know whether you're fulfilling your biblical responsibilities to women in the church who've lost their husbands. Join us in 1 Timothy chapter 5, starting at verse 9, and here's John MacArthur to begin the lesson.
In the early church, it is apparent, and it is apparent implicitly rather than explicitly, that there was in the local church, in the early church, a group of widows who were given a semi-official or official status as servants of the church. I want you to look with me in verses 9 and 10 at the qualifications for being a part of this group. Now, this is so basic. Here are the qualifications for a woman reaching 60, having lost her husband, to be put on this list, to be added to this group. Qualification number 1, verse 9. Let not a widow be enrolled or put on the list unless she's over 60. That's the idea. It starts with being over 60. Now, there's nothing said here about support, as I said before. If you try to equate the two, and some people have tried to do that, they try to say, well, the only widows a church is to support are the ones that are over 60. That's not true. That's not true at all. The widows who are to be supported are any women who are without a husband and without support. There's no age qualification. The age qualification comes for the widows who are put on this list of official servants in the church, not the ones that are supported by the church. The church is to take up the care and demonstrate the compassion of God to any woman who has lost her husband, whatever age she is, and make sure that her needs are met. But when it comes to that official group of women who serve in the church, they have to be over 60. There is no age limit placed on the support issue. I want you to understand that. Now, why 60? It seems like an unusual thing, doesn't it? Just drop 60 in there? What about 61, 59, 63, 58? Well, why 60? That's a general idea. That's just a general point of reference. In the East, in that part of the world, 60 was the age to retire from activity and engage in a life of philosophical contemplation. In the Roman Empire, 60 was the recognized age when a person was considered old because sexual passion was thought to wane at age 60. And it may have been more common then than it is now, because sexual attitudes have changed through the centuries. But these women were assumed to be women who are older. They were not driven by their sexual desires. They were mature in spirit and in experience. The key idea is they would be very unlikely to remarry. That's the key idea. They would be very unlikely to remarry. They would be very content to live out their life without conjugal relationships. And this was very important, because here's the typical scenario, right? A godly woman who spent all her life in spiritual ministry, who's washed the saints' feet, raised godly children, done all these good works, loses her husband. Having lost her husband, she's drawn to the Lord because of the strength of that relationship. And in her covenant to the Lord and the faithfulness of all those years to her husband, she can't really conceive of marrying another man. That's very difficult for her because she's lived with this one man. And so because of her love for the Lord, because she's older now and her children are grown, she says to the Lord, "Lord, I'll give the rest of my life to you." Maybe even if her children are young, she's lost the man of her love and she says, "I'll just give you my life." In a little while, she begins to feel the desire for a husband. She meant what she said when she said it, but she's sorry she said it. So let's assume she comes to the church, and let's say she's 35 years old or 40 or whatever, and she says, "I want to give the rest of my life to the Lord. You know, my husband is gone, and I loved him and him alone, and now that he's gone, I just want to give the rest of my life to serve the Lord." And in about 2 years, she's got a real problem. She has strong physical desires. She wants to get married. She's going around from house to house, and that just makes it worse and worse and worse because she keeps seeing happy marriages and home life, and every man she sees turns on lights in her head, and she becomes very, very vulnerable to an unhappy husband while she's on the circuit, as it were. And then enters compromise. She begins to want to court somebody or date somebody, and that kind of filters into this whole thing, and she's trying to serve the Lord and be pure and godly and full of virtue and teach women to be chaste and teach women to love their husbands and teach women to be content at home, and she's discontent. The whole thing just isn't right. And it may even lead to the fact that she starts to panic a little bit and settles for marrying an unbeliever. And the whole issue here is, look, don't put a young woman who may have the desire later, if not now, to get married in the official situation of being a servant of the church out there doing spiritual ministry, because it may be very difficult. It may be a compromising environment in which she is living, and it may ultimately end in disaster, and that'll bring disrepute upon the church. Don't do that. That's why in verse 11 it says the younger widows, don't put them on the list, because when they have begun to grow wanton against Christ, they'll want to marry. Literally, they will wish to marry. That's the issue. What you want on the list, listen carefully, are women who have the time and maturity, who have the character and reputation, who have the compassion to serve without any thought of ever wanting to marry again. That's the idea. Don't put a young woman on that servant's list, or she's going to compromise herself running around from house to house. She's going to see some guy out there she likes when her sexual passions are aroused, and you're going to have a problem on your hands. Don't turn her loose in the community. Because there's a lot of men out there who will take advantage of that. Boy, that's a picture of what our society does, isn't it? Single people running all over everywhere. Unprotected women, and lecherous, evil-intended men. So this woman, first of all, is to be mature enough so as not to seek to remarry, so that when she makes a commitment to serve the Lord, she has no desire to turn on that commitment, and she's old enough not to be lured by men who may lure her and not to be constantly beset by the lack of a conjugal relationship. Second principle. It says in verse 9, she is to have been a one-man woman. It's exactly the same construction that we saw back in chapter 3 regarding elders and deacons. It doesn't mean that she's only been married once, because in verse 14 he says, "I want younger widows to remarry." There's no sin there. In 1 Corinthians 7:39 he says a widow should marry again in the Lord. What it means is a one-man woman is a woman who was totally devoted to the man she was married to. It's talking about purity of action and purity of attitude. She lived in complete fidelity with her husband. She was chaste. She was pure. She had an unspotted marriage relationship. So what kind of woman goes on the list? A woman who is mature, and a woman who has lived her life in a chaste way, faithful to the husband she had. Verse 10 adds a third qualification. She is to be literally, having a reputation for good works. Well reported of for good works. She used to have a reputation for good works. What do we mean by that? Well, it's common knowledge, the kind of woman she is. Her reputation is one of nobility. She has a reputation for kalos, excellence. She is reputed to be a woman of excellent character. It's just like it says a bishop is to be blameless. Just like it says of a deacon, he is to be a man of quality, a one-woman man, verse 12 of chapter 3, who rules well his own house and so forth. He is to be, back in verse 10, blameless. An elder is to be without reproach. A deacon is to be without reproach. This woman put on this list is to be a woman without reproach. She has a reputation among all people for nobility in the spiritual dimension. She is externally good. Her life characteristic is good. You will also notice that at the end of verse 10, she diligently follows every good work. She is good and she does good. This is what she must be in order to qualify, a righteous, Christ-honoring, God-glorifying woman. Now, what does this mean? What do you mean, well reported of for good works? Well, he gives five subpoints, okay? Number one, follow this one, verse 10. If she has brought up what? Children. I cannot emphasize to you too strongly how important this is. If she has brought up children. The idea here is a very unusual word. It basically means to nourish children. This sees her as a Christian mother, bearing and raising children in a godly home. This is the greatest single privilege of a woman. Now, please, when I say that, understand that that does not mean that a woman who is not given the privilege of having children because she cannot, or a woman whom God has given the gift of singleness, is a lesser woman. It is that this is the norm and this is the general pattern, and God has His design for those who are exceptions to that. And that does not discount them. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 exalts a single person, talking about how they can be devoted to the Lord without the cares of the world that are brought about by children and family. But nonetheless, the norm and the general principle is that when you're looking for a godly woman with an excellent, noble reputation, the first thing on the list is, has she nourished children? And the idea here is right back in 2:15. Has she brought up children in faith and love and holiness with a sound mind? Has she raised godly children? That's the kind of woman you want moving around the community, giving instruction to your younger mothers, your younger wives. Secondly, verse 10 says in this little five features under the idea of her reputation, first of all, she has nourished children. Secondly, if she has lodged strangers, or literally, if she's shown hospitality to strangers, if she has received strangers, if she's had an open home and maintained hospitality to people, not the people she knew, but the people she didn't know. And let's face it, we husbands may invite and we may host the guests, but the work is carried on by the women. And we are all from time to time reminded of that, just in case we forget. And I will go to glory, deeply grateful for my own dear wife, because there's rarely a night and rarely a day in our home when we are not hosting some guest. Sometimes we know them well, sometimes we know them but casually, sometimes we don't know them at all. And inevitably, while I may carry on the conversation, she's left with the bulk of duties. And I have encouraged her with the fact that when I die and go to heaven, somebody will probably put her on the list. She doesn't necessarily look forward to that prospect. She would just as soon we go together. Well, whatever the Lord has in mind. Sacrificial devotion to the needs of people she doesn't know. Boy, that's a tremendous character quality. As somebody said to me recently, our society seems to think that a woman's place is in the mall. And it's not far from wrong. I've often wondered if we ever got back to that sort of biblical axiom that a woman's place is in the home, what tremendous things could be accomplished for the kingdom if the concentration was put where God intended it to be put. Sacrificial devotion to the needs of people she knows, sacrificial devotion to the needs of people she doesn't know. In that day, passengers, messengers, missionaries, Christians, and itinerant evangelists and preachers were moving all the time, and it was a wonderful opportunity for a woman to be gracious to them. It says of Phoebe in Romans 16:1 that she was to be commended as a servant of the church at Cenchrea, that you receive her in the Lord as become a saint, and assist her in whatever business she has need of you, for she's been a helper of many and of myself also. No doubt this dear woman opened her home and allowed those who were traveling for the sake of the gospel to share in the bounty that she could provide. The point is, this is a woman who has given herself away in ministry to others all her life, and that qualifies her to give herself away in ministry at this point when she reaches the age of 60 and is free from the responsibilities and duties of the home as she once had them. Thirdly, and this follows the same idea, verse 10, if she has washed the saints' feet. The duty of a slave was to wash the dirty and dusty feet of people who wore sandals, and all the roads were either dust or mud. It was either dry or wet, and people's feet were washed when they came into a home always, and when they reclined at supper, it was obviously a necessity to do that. So this was a literal, menial, humble task. Now, it doesn't mean that this woman literally had to do that all the time. She may have had a servant in the house that did that. But it became a euphemism for a woman with a humble spirit, a woman with a humble heart, who was willing to do that. Certainly on occasion she did that, but she showed herself as a humble servant. You remember Jesus in John 13 washed the disciples' feet, and he said, you do to others what I've done to you. It isn't just as simple as washing feet. It is as simple as seeing a person have a need. No matter how humbling meeting that need is, humble yourself and do it. So here is the character of a godly woman. This is a woman who has raised godly children. This is a woman who has opened her home to care for people who were in need. This is a woman who has done the most humble, menial service rendered to someone else. She spent her life helping people. Service at personal inconvenience. Service with humility. No prominence. No self-exaltation. Fourthly, if she has relieved the afflicted. That simply means if she has assisted people in trouble. The word afflicted has to do with pressure put on people. Those under pressure, mental pressure, physical pressure, emotional pressure, whatever kind of pressure. Has she helped, aided, assisted people in trouble under pressure? Has she spent her life as a helper of other people? You notice it doesn't say anything about where she went to school or where she graduated or where she worked or what her wardrobe looked like or how fancy her home was decorated. Doesn't say anything like that. How great a chef she was. It just talks about the beauty and the wonder of her humble, gracious spirit of service. Has she raised godly children? Has she washed the feet of the saints? Has she relieved those people who are in trouble? Has she shown hospitality to strangers? The word relieve, by the way, appears only here and in verse 16. And if you tie it with verse 16, it has to do with money, support. The widow in verse 16 is supporting other widows. So the idea is, has she given money, resources for life? It might be meals, it might be housing, it might be counsel, it might be guidance, it might be service in sickness or death. It could be many things. Has she assisted people in trouble? Has she reached out to people in need, or is she spending all her time on herself? Finally, if she has diligently followed every good work, if she's devoted herself totally to every good work, that's the idea. Strong, strong verb. Has she actively pursued every good work? Like that beautiful lady in chapter 9 who made all the clothes for the widows, and when she died, all the widows were all over the place crying like mad because the lady who provided everything for them is dead. And Peter raised her from the dead and gave her back to the widows. Remember that, Dorcas? Now listen carefully as we wrap this up. All these reveal the required character and proper preparation for a woman to be placed on the list of servants in the church. Has she cared for children, cared for orphans, loved strangers, served humbly, aided the troubled? And has her life been a constant flow of good deeds? Has she diligently pursued those things? A godly woman. If she has spent her life doing those things, then put her on that list and send her out to minister. Now, the sum of all of that, listen carefully to me, is this. If that's the kind of woman who is put on the list to serve the church, then that's the kind of woman every woman ought to be and desire to be. That's the point. The standard for the women on this list then becomes the goal of every woman, to be that kind of woman. This is how every Christian woman should seek to live. So when the day comes for her to be considered for service to her Lord's church, she will be qualified. These become the older women who can teach the younger. These become the women who raise up a godly generation. This is the priority for a woman's life, and I'm telling you how tragic it is that the world has deceived womanhood today as to what they're to be. This is how women change the world. I'm going to close with this story. Beautiful story. Ian McLaren, Scottish preacher, great Scottish preacher, told a story about a woman in his congregation. It's just beautiful. He went to visit this little lady, lived in a little cottage. And as they were talking, she began to weep. And then she began to wipe the tears with the corner of her apron. So Dr. McLaren said, "What's disturbing you, dear?" "Oh," she said, "sometimes I feel I have done so little. And when I think about it, it makes my heart heavy because really I've done so little for Jesus. When I was a wee girl, the Lord spoke to my heart and I surrendered my life to Him. And I wanted to live for Him, oh, so much," she said. "But I feel my life is gone and I haven't really done anything." Ian McLaren said, "What have you done with your life?" "Oh, nothing," she said. "Really nothing. I've washed dishes. I've cooked 3 meals a day. I've taken care of my children. I've mopped the floor. I've mended the clothes. You know, everything a mother does. That's all I've done." McLaren sat back in his chair and said, "Where are your boys?" "Oh," she spoke, "you know. You know, I named them all for the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You know them all, and you know where Mark is. You ordained him. He went to China. He's learned the language, and now he's able to minister to the people in the name of the Lord." "Where's Luke?" McLaren said. "You know well enough where Luke is, because you sent him out, and I had a letter from him the other day. He's in Africa, and he says a revival has broken out on his mission station." "And Matthew?" he asked. "Well, he's with his brother in China, and they're working together." And then she volunteered, "And John, he's only 19, and he came to me last night to say God has laid Africa on his heart. He said, 'Mother, I'm going to Africa, but don't worry or cry about it, because the Lord has shown me that I am to stay with you until you go home to glory, and then I'll go to Africa. But until then, I want to take care of you.'" Ian McLaren looked at that elderly saint and said, "Your life has been wasted, you say?" Through her tears, she said, "Yes, I fear it's been wasted. You have been cooking and mopping and washing. But," he said, "I would like to see the reward you receive when you get called home."
You're listening to Grace to You as John MacArthur, president of the Master's University and Seminary, has continued a practical study titled Caring for Widows, a study in 1 Timothy designed to give you biblical framework for how you and your church can care for this special group of ladies. John, the principles of a womanly character that you're looking at in the study, really, they don't just apply to widows. You're talking about a truth that applies to women of all ages in any situation.
Well, absolutely, they apply to all women. This is the pattern for how a Christian woman should live. This is how she should conduct herself before God, how she conducts herself with other people and even in the life of the church. It just qualifies her to be a widow who is cared for by the church. This is not something unusual. This isn't something designed for some high level of spiritual devotion. This is every woman's responsibility. This is the pattern for every woman before God. You know, that is just so far away from what women seek today. Even women in churches, even professing Christian women, don't seem to understand the divine graces that should mark a believing woman. I think we need to expand on our understanding of this, so I want to do something special today, and that is to let you know that we have a book called Divine Design. That's right, it's called Divine Design. It looks at God's design for the woman and for the man. And I want to send that book free to anyone contacting Grace to You for the first time. This is a full-size book. This is a couple hundred pages digging into what the Bible says God's design is for men and women within the context of marriage and in the life of the church. It chronicles the devastating effects of, are you listening, feminism. Feminism, which is a destructive ideology, has devastated our culture, devastated families, devastated marriages, and devastated the church. So we want you to understand what God says about the role of men and women. This approaches the delicate issue of women at work. It explains God's plan for male leadership in the home and in the church, and includes some study questions to help guide a home Bible study through this vital topic. Now, here it is again. If you have never gotten in touch with us before, you haven't contacted us in the past, we'll send you a free copy for just an introduction to Grace to You. Connect with us today, and we'll send you Divine Design, free to first-timers, but available to everybody else, affordably priced, and we'd love to send them out to you.
This helpful book lays out God's design for men and women in the context of family and the local church, the most essential building blocks for society. To get your free copy of Divine Design, contact us today. Email us your name and address, requesting it, letters@gty.org, or drop us a note in the mail to Grace to You, Post Office Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412. And remember, you may also request a free copy of Divine Design by calling 800-55-GRACE or going to our website, gty.org. Again, we'll send you a free copy of Divine Design if you're contacting us for the first time. And if you have been in touch before today, or you'd like a few extra copies to share with friends and loved ones, remember you can order Divine Design for $10.50, and shipping is included free. Order now when you call 800-55-GRACE or visit gty.org. Also remember, when you're online at gty.org, there are thousands of free resources available. For example, 3,000 or more of John's sermons are available, including the message from the current series, Caring for Widows. All are free to download. Again, that website, gty.org. For John MacArthur and the staff, thanks for tuning in today. Join us here tomorrow as John continues to highlight the vital role that you play in caring for widows. It's another half hour of Unleashing God's Truth, one verse at a time, on Grace to You.